And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, third time's the charm. We welcome back this hour Martin A. Lee, for the third time, author of Acid Dreams and Smoke Signals and many other splendid books. He has just returned from Poland to give a full report on what happened at the International Cannabinoid Research Society Conference. We will also be honoring the imminent Terp Fest, Educational Terpene Cup at Emerald Farms, PHARMS, in Hopland, Real Good Solar Living Center, that will take place on July 23rd. Oh, I'm going to be at the boring old Democratic Convention. Phooey. All right, we'll have to create a telepathic line between Terp Fest and the DNC. Right now, we're installing lines that we may be endogenously and entheogenically prepared for the Republican National Convention. I'm off on your behalf with the Pacifica Press team. Woo-hoo-hoo. And the DNC at this wild time of dire beauty, for which the plants would so like to guide our species back to conscious kinship. Martin's website is projectcbd.org. Welcome, Martin.
Very happy to be with you, Caroline. Thanks.
That's great. And then, as I said just now backstage, before Wikipedia-ing you, I didn't fully know about your, you were the co-founder of the Media Watch Group, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and have written a lot extensively on right-wing tyranny, as well as your splendid book. It's never far from me, Smoke Signals. So how perfect. Here we are, poised on the brink of the Republican Convention to talk about entheogens. Yes.
It's a propitious moment, but I suspect that will be entheogenless at that convention.
Yes. We'll see.
The right plants will be there.
Although, you know, when I was, you know, a part of a kind of straight news crew in 2000, covering the New Hampshire primary, all of the political operatives were smoking up, all the Republicans. And so you never know. I don't know if it did them any good, possibly. Some of them quit being political operatives and went to go work for Normal, so maybe it did do them some good. Yeah, there's so much we want to cover, and as we did 3 years ago, you know, we do want to honor, you know, the many colleagues I've hosted on the show, Chris Conrad and Ed Rosenfeld and Valerie Correll and Mountain Girl Carolyn Garcia. Get in touch. And Terrence Hallinan and Dr. Donald Abrams and Ethan Rosso and Dr. Andrew Weil and Jack Herrera and Keith Stroop and Steve D'Angelo and yourself and the late, great, of course, Dr. Todd Micuria. So we want to wave to his ancestral self because he would be so pleased at much of what's going on, right?
You could say he's an elder or was an elder, still is, a spirit and guidance. Dr. Todd Micuria played a major role in sort of resurrecting the interest in and the actual phenomenon of medical marijuana in the United States. And the interesting thing is he was actually at one time working for the federal government in the NIH or NIMH, one of those bureaucracies, and he kind of went native, so to speak, pardon the expression, and saw the light and decided he was more akin to the hippie side of the equation than the shirts in Washington, D.C. So he played a major role.
Yeah, no, and we do wave to him. He was ardent, passionate, but he would have probably enjoyed the Poland International Cannabinoid Research Society Conference from which you've just returned. Yes?
He might have well been presenting there in some way or another. It's really quite an amazing conference that takes place each year. Ah. It's really meant scientists who present more so than doctors, though occasionally you'll have a physician who's also a scientist. But it's really the hardcore science, and it's been pushing the envelope ever since the discovery of the receptor in the brain, so-called cannabinoid 1 or CB1 receptor that responds to THC when one consumes cannabis, and also responding 24/7 to our own endogenous marijuana-like molecules that are featured at this annual conference of the National Cannabinoid Research Society. But amazing events. I've been covering that area for about 10 years, going to these science conferences. And for me, as a layperson, it's always like learning a new language or learning a bit more. But it's really where I first learned about CBD and cannabidiol, so it has direct relevance to what's unfolding.
And Poland is the host. Is Poland got a kind of ganja rasta thing underneath?
Well, there's a ganja definitely happening over there, and certainly industrial hemp throughout Eastern and Middle Europe. But the conference actually rotates year to year, an ICRS conference, this preeminent cannabinoid science conference, rotates between North America 1 year and then always somewhere else, usually Europe the next year. It happened to be in Poland, beautiful spot in the foothills of the Tatra Mountains, which I had never heard of before, sort of situated near, I mean, if you can imagine the Polish Alps, this is what it was like. It was just stunning and a great place to be. And so you can really immerse yourself in this data and this new information that was being presented. But it won't be in Poland next year or the year after, as I say, it shifts.
Where will it be next year?
Montreal, actually.
All right.
2017. And I don't know if and I think in the Netherlands in 2018. You plan ahead, these folks. These are serious scientists.
Oh. That's so great. And it was, Dr. Todd, one of his quotes that I don't remember exactly, but he was saying the primary contribution of this plant ally really is medicinal, and the kind of, entheogenic effects are sort of secondary, although I'm not sure he lived that way.
He was quite interested in that, for sure.
Yeah.
I can tell you that from his personal contact with him, and the other plants as well. A deep respect and reverence, I would say.
Yes. And many of our dedicated listeners, of course, are up for going to Terpfest in Hopland and understand about CBDs, and we've certainly hosted many shows on it. But from our last show, I was just listening, you had mentioned also, the baby with brain tumor in which the responsible doctor said put CBD oil on baby's pacifier and brain tumor just shrinks into nothing, right?
Sometimes these things happen, and not all the times, but definitely the oil extracted from cannabis, whether it's CBD-rich, as we call it, or THC-rich, or some mixture thereof of both CBD and THC, which tends to be the best option, in our opinion, in general. Yes, it can have a very, very powerful, almost near miraculous healing effect. But again, it's not automatic, and people really need to learn how to use these very powerful tools.
Right. And then just, I had a medical exciting emergency last time I flew into San Francisco and had a shout out to Peninsula Hospital, really great team, and was given painkillers and whatnot. But the team showed up, my allies showed up with really great CBD oil, which allowed me to not use painkillers, right? Not use those Norco codeine huge things and just in a, going, oh, there we go, you can surf right ahead of it, and there we go, or maybe I used it for one day, but then off you go. So,
it's true. It's very, very potent pain-killing and anti-inflammatory properties, both CBD and THC, and this is not speculative. This has been demonstrated both in preclinical studies, animal studies, which explains the pain-killing properties of these compounds, but also very extensive clinical trials in Europe, not FDA-approved clinical trials, but trials that led to the approval of CBD-rich oils specifically for neuropathic pain in over 2 dozen countries around the world. It's an approved remedy already. So we're just kind of lagging behind in the United States, at least on official level, but on the grassroots, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, like I said, we do want to turn to the desirable, but it does seem, you know, for the OxyContin epidemic, and we go, no, here's something actually good for you. I think one of our blessings that would cover a lot, you know, may humans be only attracted to that which is good for them. That would get us a long way along. So, and then just something blessed from the past. There's many things. I was reminded in listening to you, that August 28th, 1964 is when Bob Dylan first met the Beatles and got them high on marijuana. It was the first time they'd ever smoked, the first time they'd met Bob Dylan, and the first time they ever smoked up, which is just a great moment.
It should be a national holiday.
It should be a national holiday.
Maybe a planetary holiday.
Right.
Yes, it's quite a key moment, seminal moment, so to speak, at least in the
well, culture. You know, as we bring everything useful into now, into the dire beauty of now, you know, there is a 60s hum. You know, it's like Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, right? So there is a 60s resonant rhyme, and I think just bringing August 28th, 1964 forward with us and Sergeant Pepper and all of those things into, you know, when there was an outward cultural expression of an inward collective experience, it was all very exciting. Okay, so we would like that, and we do. We are having that.
Well, no doubt about that. That is the history. What's happening with medical cannabis in the United States today really does emerge from the 1960s. There's no question about it. There's no denying that fact. Well, I think the rest of the country largely has come around, at least when it comes to the issue of medical use of marijuana. It seems that's pretty much a cultural consensus already, that one should have the choice to pursue that as an option under the supervision of a physician. And I don't think there's an argument about that much anymore in the United States.
Although maybe you can help us out, because there was just that extraordinary and outrageous raid on the cannabis medical dispensary in Santa Rosa, right? They complied with all the rules. They did everything. They gave the mayor a tour. That was great. And then the next day on opening day, they were raided by the DEA.
You know, this is an event that's very intimate for me, because Project CBD was advising the Care by Design, a production operation that was producing a lot of CBD-rich oil. I would say it was the largest operation in California within the medical marijuana context, at least that I'm aware of. And so it wasn't just a dispensary that was raided. It was actually a production facility that supplied hundreds of dispensaries around the state. And the whole thing is weird. As best I can tell, it was almost a kind of fluke. The law enforcement, I think, understood very quickly they made a big mistake, and all the allegations that had been leveled at Care by Design have been proven false already. So now it's a matter of just getting back on their feet. And I think they're a very resilient, resourceful group, and will be doing so. But, you know, it's almost like a seizure or a stroke has happened. You know, they have to respond now to this huge insult that is really, for the moment, we stopped production on a pretty large scale.
So all charges were dropped?
No charges were ever filed.
Well, wait a minute. Somebody was on $5 million bail for being charged under some amphetamine-like law.
For 2 days a person was being held on that, but he was never actually charged. And I guess the rule is in California or something that you can't be just held indefinitely without being charged. And after 2 days, he was let go. That was Dennis Hunter.
Right.
Again, the whole thing is crazy. And while, you know, I have no love for the law enforcement side of the drug war equation, I mean, this wasn't simply cops versus cripples here. It was a lot of confusion and misdirection and misleading understanding that led to this. And I think, hopefully we'll just move past it, but it brought to the highlight and forefront issues that have yet to be resolved, how medical marijuana is going to be regulated. Like, for example, what is a toxic solvent that's used for extracting the oil, and what's a non-toxic solvent that law enforcement didn't seem to know the difference. So it's these kind of issues, but it can be somewhat arcane. The important thing is that these kinds of medicines are now available in California, and if one needs them, one can get them. And as a result, there's been a kind of a laboratory experiment democracy that has been unfolding in California that's really interesting and compelling and serious when it comes to understanding the medicinal potential of the plant and actually using it. So hopefully that won't be interrupted too badly and people back on.
Right. Yeah, and then just as a sidebar, my coyote dog is pretty happy with Canipet, is a legal form of cannabis, dog biscuits and cat biscuits, whatever, with pretty high CBDs for any infirmity, completely legal, no THC. And I go, just a little shout out, we like that. It's moving everywhere. But to segue from, you know, in the last show, you revealed the fantastic etymology of twine, like hemp twine, and twin, yeah. And twin, and they do come together. I love that. So twine and twin, yes,
it's interesting. I mean, that whole notion, you know, when I think about the spirit of cannabis, interrogate the plant and what's happening, that sense of duality or the twin or the trickster aspect of the plant really keeps coming through very, very strong. And very much so when you look at the therapeutic potential of cannabis and understand more about the plant in that context. It always seems to cohere around this archetype of the double, the twin, or the dyad, whether that's the key moment for cannabis. You know, that you were talking about the etymology, as I see it, I think one can really make the case for cannabis as a kind of trickster plant, if there could be such a thing for a plant. And we know that relates to Hermes and Mercury, and Mercury and Gemini, and Gemini the twins, and twin related to twine, and twine related to hemp, et cetera, et cetera.
And Bob Dylan, a Gemini. So there we go.
Yeah, oh, not just Dylan, but you know, I think it might sound strange, but to some at least, but if the plant has a sign, it would definitely be Gemini. And that comes through on the therapeutic side of it, too, very, very strong. That sense
right.
of doubleness, when you look at it in many different ways, it always comes across. And I think that's a challenge in some ways in terms of mastering, if one could think of it that way, mastering this plant, but certainly optimizing its therapeutic potential. It does help to understand the dualistic nature of the plant in terms of its spirit.
And you speak about the twin receptors.
Yes, there you go. It's two receptors, two cannabinoid receptors that scientists have discovered. It's a focal point of these conferences we were talking about earlier, CB1 and CB2. One mainly in the brain in the central nervous system, the other in the periphery, and how they're kind of like a big yin-yang in a way. And then there's also two main endogenous marijuana-like compounds that the human brain and body produces. And then there's two axes of therapeutic concern. There's the ratio of CBD to THC, the cannabinoid axis that one has to be considering both as a patient or a healer. And then there's also it's a ratio-specific kind of axis, and there's a strain-specific terpene axis as well. So you can really tease this out in a lot of ways, and I think it's helpful to keep that in mind, even when considering the deep science of the cannabinoid field. I think there's a deep poetry to the science, and I think looking to myths and archetypes really helps one understand it.
That's beautiful. Because we want the rewedding of poetry and science, because poetry gives science its moral guidance of kinship, going, yes, we're all in this dream together, as a friend says, same boat, samadhi. But you also write, you know, that the receptor is in all creatures with a spine. Is that right? Or no, actually even more.
Anything with the spinal cord, the actual word. And animals at one point in evolution that didn't have spines yet, but only had cords, spinal cords. And this is, we're talking 500 million years ago, but it's really at that point that the the first receptor emerges. Scientists, again, have traced all this stuff out, not just on the brain side, but also on the plant side, when cannabis actually became cannabis and emerged from what was a prototype of a hops cannabis combination.
Hops cannabis combination, yes, like what?
Yeah, in terms of the cannabis as a plant species, its brother or sister, as it were, would be hops. It's part of the same group. But at one point almost 30 million years ago, cannabis and hops were the same plant.
Wow.
Then they diverged. It's placed about 29 million years ago, actually. That was a fascinating lecture about this. at the recent science conference in Poland. So, yeah, and you know, you can get it's breathless, and breathtaking when you consider the scope of these things. But we're talking about a communication system and where cells speak to each other that has been evolving for 500 million years throughout, and it's a through line throughout the animal evolution, and that means it's something very important because it's stuck around all that time. And the plant itself only about 30 million years, so the plant came much later. But you know, with plants, it's all about signaling molecules, and plants speak to each other, and they speak to insects, and they interact by emitting smells and volatile molecules. And sometimes when a plant is under stress, it's being eaten by, you know, its leaves are being nibbled or whatnot. So it sends out a signal, which is a signal to help attracting an insect that will then eat the predator. Well, these very molecules that the plants communicate with each other with and with the insect world, in a stressful context, they're useful for people. For healing stress or for modulating stress. These very same compounds, and cannabis is full of them. They're terpenes, the compounds that give cannabis its smell. So, you know, these things are all interrelated. And what's beautiful as we deepen our understanding of the science is that how profoundly, you know, you could situate cannabis in the broader context in medicinal herbs, because all herbs have terpenes and that are involved in this kind of communication process. But I think sometimes when I look at the plant and consider it, I think people are almost like an afterthought. Their communication is really toward insects and other plants, and it so happens there's what they call secondary metabolites that the plants create in order to communicate, and just happen to resonate very powerfully with their own nervous system and brains.
Huh. And well, I'm what the reason I was like, wow, is since my gallbladder went to Spirit World, I when I go place, I go, give me your most bitter, hoppiest beer, because it feels really great. And I now know, you know, because it does. It feels medicinal. And there it is, hops and cannabis, one plant. I love that. That's so great. Mm-hmm. And then
oftentimes the same terpenes will be in humulus or hops, as in cannabis. In fact, there is a terpene that's named after humulus, and that can sometimes and have certain medicinal properties, as all these volatile aromatic compounds do, and they can exist in many different plants. But as I say, hops and cannabis share a lot of the same terpene sets. So, yeah, that's part of it. So you're onto something there. I heard beer is good for osteoporosis. Too, so.
Well, again, the hoppy, I want the hoppy, I want the hops, not the wheat, I want the bitter thing. But also, yeah. You know, you've written and spoken about, you know, that in the evolution, you know, that sponges have these, receptors, and then you said, you know, in evolution, and you'll have to fill in the blank here, it's the capacity to turn down excitement.
Yeah, well, that's actually what these receptors and these endogenous cannabinoid compounds do. They regulate. They're like a homeostatic mechanism. So when, for example, you're under stress and your stress hormones are being created at that moment, I mean, something has to turn that down and bring you back to normal or baseline level. Otherwise, you'd be stressed out for your whole life. In fact, chronic stress is an issue and a problem as it relates to the endocannabinoid system. So it's sort of like a thermostat that kind of keeps things level, but it's a thermostat that you might think of it rather than one, think of 1,000 thermostats on a wall, and each one has a different function. One would regulate blood pressure, another bone density, another your mood, another something to do with your digestion, et cetera, et cetera. All these different physiological processes are actually regulated by what we call the endocannabinoid system, because these molecules have a way of, again, turning down overexcited signaling of other neurotransmitters.
Well,
that's what it does. And that, when I say overexcited, that's not quite the right word, because, okay, you have, for example, here's another yin-yang. You have glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter system, and then GABA, that responds to Valium and benzos and things like that. So if you have an excess of your GABA receptor activity, you're going to be a sluggish human being, because that's it. So the interesting thing about cannabis, it works in a bidirectional way. For someone who's sort of sluggish, a strain will energize them. Someone who's overexcited or hyper, it will the same exact strain, the same remedy will calm them. And that's one aspect of cannabis as a medicine, as a plant. It's an adaptogenic plant. There's, you know, there's a few dozen of these kind of plants that belong to this very unique medicinal group, ashwagandha in Ayurvedic medicine. Ginseng is another adaptogen. And definitely I would think cannabis belongs in that category, because it has that bidirectional facility, and it also acts directly on your stress system.
And rhodiola root.
Yes, that's another one, exactly.
Which was used at the Asclepions, right? I mean, the Asclepions, ancient, related, a non-entheogenic version of the Eleusinian mysteries. But, you know, once humans had ways of gathering and wise things, so people at the Asclepions would drink rhodiola root tea to come into balance and then intend to dream. But so it's ashwagandha, rhodiola root, and what was the other one?
Ginseng. There's 2 or 3 dozen of these that are recognized to have this bidirectional capability, and also this ability to act on what's called the HPA, or hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, that governs one's stress response. That these herbs act directly on the stress response. They again balance stress, which is so fundamental in terms of.
Well, what was the quality of cannabis? You know, one story, I guess, is in its illegal journey, the kind of hyper-yang, you know, increase of THC, THC. Was that the cannabis that one might smoke and go, oh, my God, I can't pay my bills and my life is a mess and I can't do anything? What does that?
That kind of cannabis, that very high THC, real stony cannabis that a lot of people really love, is a relatively recent development, in the sense that really emerged starting in the early 70s when social radicals and refugees from the 60s went up the country in Northern California and started growing pot and breeding it. And some people really got into the breeding, and they developed, not through any kind of ill intent, they would breed strains that in order to make them make people get as high as possible with all different kinds of psychoactive flavors embedded in the different varieties. But in so doing, they inadvertently bred out the CBD part of the plant. It became kind of recessive. But when I look at that phenomenon, by the late 70s, we have strains like Skunk and a little later Blueberry and Northern Lights and Haze and these classic great strains that got you very, very high. In some ways, I see it as almost kind of a strong medicine in response to really strong stress in the culture. And on the one hand, on the other hand, you're also missing the CBD that's very, very important. And now we have the return of the CBD. It's part of the medical marijuana mix, and that's had a huge impact in a lot of ways. It's not a euphoric compound, CBD. It can actually lessen the psychoactivity of THC when combined with it. So the long and short of it means now we have more options for those that need that high THC medicine. And I must confess, I partake of it myself. That's there, but you have that whole range from high CBD to high THC.
And I guess
one should.
Yeah, and I guess we do fluctuate. I remember when Steve D'Angelo, on the show, and I asked him to guide me to what's the most CBD, and I go, oh, here you go. And I did feel a kind of, yes, relaxing into deep embracing, it's everything's going to be okay, kinship, going, oh, that's really good. So
it really is that really helps relieve anxiety, and that it really relaxes in a kind of a very profound way, almost relaxes into sort of chakras. You know, it's very deep, a CBD experience. I wouldn't actually call it non-psychoactive.
Right. No.
It started in the early days because it does affect one's mood and one's outlook, particularly if you're feeling a lot of pain all the time. You can get relief from that. You're going to be in better space, obviously. You're going to be in a better mood, and I would call that's a psychoactive effect. It's just that it's not a stoning effect. It doesn't get you buzzed like THC, but it does alter your mood, but it's more subtle and nuanced.
Right. And when we come back after a very short break, we want to the twin thing. I want to go into one of the things that you're doing and is happening now, which is the twin relationship between cannabis and environmental ingenuity and the Solar Living Center and all of that. The upcoming Terp Fest at Emerald Farms, PHARMS, and the symbiotic relationship of, well, cannabis growing funded a lot of solar panels and whatnot, and that's a very interesting twinned relationship. It makes a lot of sense, as though the plant, you know, well, is a necessary ally again in this extremely important way. This, you know, renaissance of sanity and ingenuity that's rising before us. So I want to tease that forth, you know, because that's part of your primary dedication right now, right?
Yep, I'm there to talk about it. It's going to be a fun event.
Yeah, no, I love that. Our guest today is Martin A. Lee. We put the initial there because there are a number of other Martin Lees out there, but for search purposes, Martin A. Lee. His website is projectcbd.org. He is the author of many wonderful things, but I have beside me Smoke Signals. In fact, I keep it next to the I Ching and Lao Tzu as well. It's such a great resource. And we'll be right back after a very short break.
Shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his tortoise cry.
Lost it down.
Channy, 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 come blow my channy home. Channy, 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 come blow my channy home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our splendid ally guest this hour is Martin A. Lee, author of Acid Dreams and many books, but especially Smoke Signals, which is such a great book, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific, came out a while ago. But let's spiral to you know, the great article you guided me to, on the upcoming Emerald Farms Terpene Cup, the imminent Terp Fest, and this relationship, the symbiotic relationship of wonderful John Schaefer and the Solar Living Center and the marijuana dispensary and the relationship of this plant and environmental ingenuity.
Well, the story, in a sense, started at least the recent chapter, but when John Schaefer, the proprietor of Real Goods and the Solar Living Center director, in Hopland, an early innovator in terms of solar power and a key figure in spreading that and launching the interest in that and the availability of the solar panels. Back in the 1970s, he approached us a couple of years ago at Project CBD. He was interested in starting a medical cannabis dispensary, which now exists on the wonderful 12-acre, we call it a permaculture paradise in Hopland and the Solar Living Center. Now, Emerald Farms is there, and there will be a Terp Fest, as you say, a couple of weekends from now. But the interesting convergence, when you go back to the 1970s, when picking it up from when folks are going up the country, the social radical, the hippies and whatnot, who are leaving the city after the 60s, and looking for a cleaner and more natural life. And it is out of that phenomenon that both the cannabis growing and the solar power movement, as it were, started in Northern California. And a lot of it revolved around John Schaefer. And essentially, the long joy of it is that he was providing and making available the first solar panels that enabled cannabis growers to live off the grid, starting in the mid-late 70s. And they were the only ones who could afford these panels. They cost a lot of money at the time. So you had the cannabis growers using the panels to live off the grid and to grow their cannabis. In the meantime, they're helping to grow this nascent industry, the solar panel industry, the solar power industry. So they grew up together, and it's a kind of a wrinkle in history I sort of wish I had known about. Or I just had intimations of while writing Smoke Signals, but it really underscores the convergence of and environmentalism, if you will, and both the cannabis growing and the green energy technologies that really are showcased up at the Solar Living Center, and some nice convergence between the green medicine and the green energies and the green buildings. And it's a beautiful synergy, and we're really excited about that and appreciate the chance to be up there and working in that context.
Right. No, I just want to underline that of, you know, serendipitous symbiosis, synchronicity. These are all trickster qualities of the plant and our minds, and that solar would not have started without weed growers. That's part of the article that you guided me to. That article, people can find that. Is that on your website?
That would probably be on the Emerald Farms website.
Oh, okay.
EmeraldPharms.com. And I think they have like a news section. They've gotten a lot of really nice write-ups because it is kind of interesting and unusual. It's the only solar-powered medical marijuana dispensary that
cool.
I know of. But it's not just solar power again. It's all the. It's really a showcase for a lot of holistic approaches to living and to healing, for sure.
No, it's great. Yeah, the article said it was the author said it was the Epcot Center for Solutions. And yeah, John Schaefer, great ally, great friend of show, great friend of all life. But yeah, and he's in such a great phase of life right now. He's really, you know, like happier and more integrated than ever. I hosted him again a couple weeks ago. But yeah, so for starters, the Solar Living Institute has 150,000 visitors a year, and now with Emerald Farms, plus the cannabis education, it's like, whoa, here we go. We love that thing. We love the intertwining of it. And then, you know, I want to just proffer a number of ways we can go with you as an invaluable resource. So there is all of that, and feel free to go back to Terpfest and Terpenes, because we want to honor that. But I also want to just tease us in, since you are uniquely equipped. I mean, you know, having researched, you know, right-wing movements and you know, cannabis kind of equally, and we go, and what would you be your blessing for the Republican convention, perhaps?
Oh, my God.
Oh, just for the fun of it. Well, because actually Terpfest will be July 23rd, which is actually after the Democratic convention has ended the day before. I suppose we could all rush out to Terpfest to recover. I don't know, just for the whimsical fun of it, Martin Lee, you know, what would you wish for the Republican convention, which might not be entheogenic free? We don't know.
You know, you'd almost be better posing that question to the ghost of Hunter Thompson. I could only
answer. Yes. Yes. Okay, that's good.
No, you know what I mean? The Turf Fest does happen the weekend, I guess it is, of the Democratic Convention. It should just be ending. I have friends who are going as Bernie delegates. And
yeah.
They're the kind of folks that sort of make their own decisions. So I don't know what's going to happen there. And I don't think they're going to fix that spoiler stand still for much of that.
Well,
it's going to be pretty interesting.
I gotta go. I'm bringing plenty of coyote hair for sure. Just to go hua hua. Because it, part of the kind of everything resonating with the '60s and related and dancing in a twinned fashion. There's the power fist of the '60s. And then you know there's this wonderful tradition of turning fist, good start, into open palm. Hua. And then you blow the coyote hair or the blessing going, yeah, power, and there may you be healed. So I'll be...
Well, I mean, to your point about the issue of right-wing extremism and all,
yeah.
You know, when you talk about history of entheogens and interest in consciousness-altering plants, it goes back much earlier than the 1960s, and it doesn't necessarily have a relationship to anything remotely... you associate with sort of social justice politics, particularly in the German tradition, German language tradition. You have nothing short of calling the fascists who were involved with early masculine experiments, people like Ernst Jünger, Martin Heidegger apparently had taken LSD with Junger. You know, people associated with the kind of the pantheon of right-wing thinkers, if you will. And even when, in the 60s, you know, there was a germ of it in the United States, a kind of hardcore libertarianism that would have seen Goldwater as kind of a wimpy sellout, much too moderate, that always associated with the cannabis phenomenon and seen as something that the government should stay out of, and therefore you had on the far right of the spectrum, if it makes sense to speak of left and right in this way. But even going back to the mid-60s, there was an element of that always. And there's been a kind of, I hope no one's offended, the principled libertarianism with a capital L. And I'm not a libertarian with a capital L, but always one that has seen that cannabis is something that the government ought to stay out of. And that convergence of left and right is very evident today. You have this sort of unique politics where it kind of gets a little muddled with cannabis, because you have liberals who sort of all of a sudden are for states' rights when it comes to cannabis, and then you have these libertarians who want to be taxed and regulated by the government. You know, it's all muddled in terms of how left and right you usually line up on things. Once you add cannabis into the mix, everything gets turned topsy-turvy. But so it's not just a left-wing thing, and certainly in terms of entheogens and experimentation and all that, it has no political affiliation whatsoever. In fact, when you go back and look at it, you'd be surprised at some of the characters involved in that way.
Yeah.
There are no left great writers and thinkers about this stuff. I'm not putting anybody down. It's just that is the history.
Why might we have thought you were putting anybody down?
Well, you know, when you talk about someone who's a fascist like Ernst Junger,
that's not putting him down. That's just an accurate diagnosis. But
when you read his writing, he's an amazing writer, and they can evoke through words a kind of a feeling around the psychedelic experience, like very few can do. But clearly, in terms of the political spectrum, he would be. Not a hippie.
Well, I'm certainly considering, consider with the stars, much about, how can we cross borders, some of which are cons, and, what we'd spoken about 3 years ago, last show, is, in all the traditional herbals, Culpeppers and before, cannabis is associated with Saturn, and Saturn represents autonomy in a way, and so I like the cross borders concept that whether it's libertarians or anybody, it's an inhaling of one's own autonomy, and therefore the reality police are not up for that. No, we are outsource your autonomy, insource the kind of Saturn dynamic, but that might be something that kind of bridges what you were saying. Well, there's the libertarians, and we go, they want their own autonomy, and then there's everybody going autonomy, yes, that's a good thing, because I'm certainly, again on a side level, and wondering about, sure, Pacifica has a tradition way back of talking across borders to conservatives and whatnot, and I'm going, if I were to talk to a Trump kind of person, how would one, start the conversation in accord? And I think, I want to turn this back to, cannabis. I think one could say, let's agree that everyone wants to know how they're being conned. I think that'll work, actually. I'm not quite sure what to do after that, but I think that one will work. And to talk about the con man and the trickster, the toxic mimic, the con can look like the liberating thing, but it's actually imprisoning. I think we'll see if I can do that at the convention or not. We'll see. But I think that's part of our dynamic. Again, what is the con is what imprisons. The trick, really, as you say, it's a trickster plant, is that which liberates. Which is not to say, I know people who've smoked for years and you couldn't tell if they've ever had an interesting thought. So it's not guaranteed, but it is available.
That's part of its trickster character, I think, that people can do that. So just like what you said.
It's amazing. It is amazing. Yeah, that they can smoke and get something numb, maybe, but not exactly a quality of exalted thought and kinship, which is available. The cooperators are standing by. I loved it also in the article that you guided me to, that people can find at Emerald Farms, PHARMS.com, that Colorado just hosted its first cannabis wedding expo.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of things like that going on now in Colorado and Oregon and Washington State. I remember a few years back, even in Vancouver, they were having bed and breakfast, you'd go there and there would be a joint on your pillow, even though I mean, Vancouver was ahead of the curve at that point, but in Canada. But yeah, I mean, this is part of the cultural shift that's going on, and it's major. There's no question there's a shift in attitude culturally toward cannabis, and certainly the whole medical thing is the cutting edge of that, and within that, CBD is really what's pushing everything forward in a lot of ways. And changing the discussion around cannabis. But I think, I mean, it's interesting because all these forces that are now in play with the big money moving in and possible legalization in November for adult use in California, which would be pretty major, for the entire country, not just California. And, you know, a sense of that being a possible tipping point, and yet the tipping points, we seem to already pass them. You know, what's going to happen, it's going to be pretty crazy. I just hope that whatever goes on, that we at the grassroots could continue this experiment that we've been involved with, this healing experiment, that space in which that can thrive can be encouraged, even though clearly Big Pharma is going to, you know, move into the cannabinoid medicine field much more strongly than it's been thus far. And that's inevitable. We're going to see CBD as a single molecule legal pretty soon, I would imagine. But that's going to be very limited in terms of therapeutic impact, because really the magic is in the whole plant.
Right.
We've got to make sure that we can relate to that plant still therapeutically, and that the space doesn't kind of get hogged or expropriated by Big Pharma at all. There's no doubt there'll be a push for that, but we have to be ready to defend what we've been doing and advance it.
Definitely, an alliance with the plant in that way, and to protect it from Big Pharma coming in already. You know, the Dementors backstage lusting over the sheer amount of money in that realm.
It's really to protect us. It's more to protect us than protect the plant, because I think in some basic ways the plant doesn't need us as much as we need it. I don't know. I'd like to think we're on even keel or even level playing field, but I don't think we are. Must be very amused by us.
Well, I like that idea. But I do, you know, with cannabis and then the entheogenic plants, I do trust them. I trust them more than the humans. There's, you know, this explosion, you know, as ancient world, you know, the riptide of ancient world and entheogenic practice and modern everything, you know, meet each other. There's some good things and some wary things. And, you know, with the ayahuasca tourism, some of which is sketchy and some of which is okay. And I go, well, I think the plants just want to reach as many humans as possible, and I just go to that level of communication, or hoping, and that idea of partnership, but just in I do use your book, Smoke Signals, as a divinatory tool. I just sometimes open it up at random. And I loved last time you said, that the entheogens are kind of like, you know, big thing. But you said cannabis is really like living according to the Tao.
Well, yeah, I've had experience somewhat with the stronger plants, the mushrooms, the ergot derived from the fungus that we call it LSD. And yeah, they can really open you to, you know, to provoke visions and real profound insights, momentary satoris. But I think when it comes to integrating those visions, that's where cannabis comes in, because ultimately it's about living a balanced life. It's about, and that entails living a healthy life in some very germane and basic way. I think the key to health is nourishing one's own endocannabinoid system, because that's what maintains balance. That's our Tao, if you will. That's the Tao of health. And there's many ways to do that, and not just through cannabis. There's many, many ways to affect what scientists refer to as endocannabinoid tone. I can make it strong and healthy, enhance it if need be, through diet, through exercise, through stress reduction techniques, through wonderful herbs like cannabis, and too many other herbs too that turn out to interact either directly or indirectly with the endocannabinoid system. So a lot of ways to do that, and so the insights that I've taken away from psychedelics point to the need to sort of, you know, walk the talk, live the dream literally, and integrate that into one's life. And to me, that comes down to you know, living a balanced life, and cannabis is a very powerful tool to facilitate that. At least, yeah, I like to look at it that way, but it is a trickster plant too, and that's just right. One take off.
No, I love that. Yeah, on the one hand, on the other hand, and I love Lao Tzu as a Rasta. So that Rasta Lao Tzu from the 12th century, and somebody's guided me to my new, their favorite translation of Lao Tzu. Now it's mine by a wonderful American poet named Widder Binner. But even just the little short things, you know, let life ripen and then fall. Force is not the way at all. It's very Rasta. Mm-hmm. It's very Rasta. And then when I said that I love to open your book, Smoke Signals, as a divinatory thing, I'm so interested, you know, here, we just want to go broad for a moment here. I'm so interested in, you know, Arab culture and Islamic faith. And, you know, and when we talk about, you know, the soul of Islam and all, but you write, as the Islamic faith expanded, the use of cannabis spread across the Middle East. You know, we want to talk about, you know, ganja, that ganja, you know, from India, you know, was then taken to Jamaica. I mean, that this crossing borders theme all over the place, you know, that it allows our mind to cross borders and then it literally crosses borders. But about the Islamic faith and the use of cannabis, you say symptomatic of its far-reaching cultural impact, hashish acquired numerous Arabic appellations. Rouser of thought, bush of understanding, branch of bliss, shrub of emotion, medicine of immortality. And by the 13th century, cannabis consumption had become commonplace in Persia and the Arab lands, giving rise to many colorful legends. In 1001 Nights, several characters take hashish and fantasize about a better life. Yes, I love the Arabian Nights. And I was surprised when I went to Syria, when it was peaceful once, and may it be again, but nobody was smoking. I mean, the Bedouins were not. And I was like, what happened to that? But can you say an anti-authoritarian streak characterized the hashish imbibing Sufis? So, you know, would we wish, is that a missing sacrament that could really help over there in that whole realm?
Well, it's definitely still part of, at least when you talk about the Arab Middle East,
yes.
Certainly, I mean, definitely part of the culture in Morocco and other places, Lebanon, you know, notorious hashish source. But the Arab world, the Muslim world, just like any other broad cultural phenomenon like this, is going to, when you talk about cannabis, there's going to be that double thing. And you had drug warriors in that Muslim world who were waging wars against cannabis, and then you had you know, great acceptance also. And at the very time that Moorish culture was dominant in northern Africa and even in southern Europe, cannabis was considered acceptable, certainly as a medicine, and to some extent as a recreant, as opposed to alcohol, which was explicitly forbidden in the Quran. So, and you know, this was the peak of civilization, you could call it, at the time that cannabis was so intimately part of it. But you know, but it can cut either way, and just as it always is with that trickster plant. So,
right.
There's one really, really wonderful little anecdote. I don't know that it's ever been shared anywhere, but there was at one point in Egypt in the early 1950s, Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was an Arab nationalist and ultimately a foe of the U.S. and targeted CIA assassination plots and so forth. But the interesting thing is, at one point, he was jailing all the communists in Egypt, and he put the head of the Egyptian Communist Party, who happened to be Jewish, in jail. And he was in jail with the head of the Muslim Brotherhood at the same time. Nasser was going after the Muslim Brotherhood as well, which the CIA was supporting. And there's this great encounter with Amir Curiel, the Jewish chief of the Egyptian Communist Party, in jail, being offered hashish by the head of the Muslim Brotherhood in the early 1950s. So strange bedfellows for sure, and it shows you the history is very odd that the communists, about the communists and the radical Islamists at the time were de facto allies against someone who was pegged as an enemy of the U.S. You know, it's a very strange, complicated politics.
No, that's completely intriguing. And just part of our imaginative, increasingly liberated whimsy, may it be so. You know, it's like Steve Behrman says, you know, visualize world peace, too abstract. Visualize, you know, Margaret Thatcher and, you know, Yasser Arafat doing the whatever, some dance together. But yes, imagine backstage what you've just done. Also the head of the, you know, Communist Party who's Jewish in Egypt, you know, smoking up with at the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, even though they're backed by the CIA, smoking up in prison. I like it as an image. I think it's a good image.
I don't know if they ultimately smoked together, but the offer was made. Just put it that way.
Oh, okay. All right. Retroactively, may they inhale their autonomy and their sacrament with their autonomy. Just on so many levels, you know, it's out there in the world, you know, there was the incredibly, you know, horrible the killings of last week, policemen, black men, the killings of police, and then the robot bomb delivered to Micah Johnson and taking him to death. And people were saying, because it's like, no, that's not a good idea no matter what. People were saying, well, the police had no other choice. It's like, he was cornered. You know how they move bees in Mexico. They just light a couple of ganja plants and, you know, move the bee. You know, just four marijuana plants and a fan. That's really, you know, to cool everything out. I just would, you know, when you talk about, you know, the adaptogens, the ashwagandha, the rhodiola root, the ginseng, the cannabis. This should be how we define policing, really, as cooling it out, you know, again, you know, anti-inflammatories, you know, a round of that to all things. And, you know, and that's why I like thinking of that going, all righty, and even to the Republicans, there we go. We wish that. But, yeah,
that's
so
a nice thought, anti-inflammatory police.
And then for all of us, you know, that we, you know, with the help of these beautiful plants, this beautiful plant, you know, dedicate to being agents of cool response in a hot, reactive world, that we go, you know, and I think that's where the plant really can help us, you know, to pour the cool waters. And, you know, and all of the connection of, you know, cannabis and jazz and New Orleans and all coming in, and our word cool comes from, you know, popularized by jazz musicians in New Orleans and into the world, is a Yoruba word, kulu kulu. It means completely responsible. You know, and it was associated with cannabis, completely responsible cannabis kind of person. And they also said, you know, as in English, it means cool like temperature. And so they said, you know, with the help of cannabis, imagine your head as cool, move all the heat in your head down to your heart, you know, so then you enter cool situations. It's the opposite of road rage, right? So that we're agents of cool response in a hot, reactive world. So may we all aspire to be that. Yeah, and that's what the sacrament does. Well, so is there any well wishing that you would want to receive or to spiral forth? You know, again, we have Terp Fest, and maybe you could do. We have 40 seconds or so. You know, but and where can we find out more about terpenes, for instance?
Actually, on the Project CBD website, projectcbd.org, there's information. But in terms of actual Terp Fest, you can go to the emeraldfarms.com website. They'll have information about it there. It's next week, July 23rd, next weekend, all day, 10 to 6, Hopland, Emerald Farms, Solar Living Center. Everybody join in. And if you can't make it then, stay in touch with Project CBD. You know, have a
definitely
news feed, and we'll keep on doing it.
No, you are a great teammate. You live always in my interior council of brain trust. Thank you so much, Martin Lee. Great contributor to the team and great ally and voice for the plant. It's a wonderful thing. So thank you very much, Martin.
Thank you, Caroline. It's a pleasure.
That's great. Thanks always to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley and also to Timmy Olmsted in Washington, D.C. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Follow me on Twitter, Stand Up Coyote, or Facebook, Coyote Network News. And I will be part of the Pacifica wonderful team going to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland on Sunday. We'll begin our reporting Monday night. Pacifica, stay tuned for that. And then we'll be on to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Woof, woof, woof. We are your agents there, cahooting inwardly and outwardly, cross-pollinating and bringing Trickster into unlikely places. Thank you all so much, team. We will reconvene next week from the convention. Woohoo!
Are you tired of The Matrix?
The movie?
No, not the movie, but the one you're living in. If so, then hang out with your friends at The Full Circle.
What's the Full Circle?
Full Circle is a radio show written, produced, and directed by apprentices right here at KPFA. We'll bring you everything from the obscure to the obvious, the hidden and the blatant, as well as all things in between. So be informed. Hear about your world community every Friday night from 7 to 8 p.m. on 94.1 FM, where we'll serve you the red pill with love.
The KPFA Community Advisory Board is holding an informational community meeting about the current state and possible future of the Pacifica Network, including KPFA, its sister stations, and 200 affiliates around the country. The meeting is free, open to the public, and will be held on July 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Sports Basement, located at 2727 Milvia Street in Berkeley, in the community room. Presenters will update attendees on Pacifica finance, governance, and programming. There will be a time for discussion and feedback, which the CAB will share with station management and the governing local station board. Again, that's July 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Sports Basement in Berkeley.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFA.